And okay, great. Now I'd like to introduce our first speaker. It's a unique privilege in some ways to get to introduce him. John Gilmore is someone who's been deeply involved with the GNU project for many years, and he's also very well known, obviously, for his work with EFF and the creation of the EFF. Today, John's going to help us, and in fact, the whole of today's schedule feels to me like it's looking at the future for free software, where we're heading, what our options are. And John's going to start today with a conversation about what comes after cloning Unix. What do we do next? And hopefully we can get some inspiration from John. Thank you, John.
Sounds good. Yeah. So, indeed, this isn't going to be much of a talk unless you do most of the talking. When Richard started the Free Software Foundation, his first project was a text editor. This confused a lot of people. It's like, why are you writing a text editor? How can this be a huge big project? You know, why, how are we going to save the world with a text editor? Well, they didn't know Emacs. But part of what inspired people was the idea that, well, this isn't just a text editor, it's not just a debugger, it's not just a C compiler. We have a goal, and it's a long-term goal. It's going to take us years, and we're going to get there, and it'll be really valuable when we get there, because we'll take a complete software system and make it freely available and better than the original. We did that. And now we're sort of like one of those medical charities that has succeeded in wiping polio from the face of the earth. It's like, well, okay, we're still here. What do we do next? So I've had a few thoughts about this. But I don't really trust my thoughts about this. I think it really has to be more of a community discussion, a community decision. So I wanted to get your ideas. My own first thought about this is, well, okay, we have succeeded in freeing up 5% of the software infrastructure in operating systems. You know, rah, 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 okay. Maybe we could do a little better next time. And the obvious target is Microsoft Windows. Right? Why don't we free up 90% of the software operating system infrastructure? Now, I've been working with Code Weavers for almost a decade. They are the sort of largest company working on the Wine project, which is a Windows emulator. It lets people run Windows user programs in user space on a Unix or Linux or Mac operating system. And to do that, they had to fully understand the whole structure of Windows DLLs and what all the calls mean and re-implement all the sort of user space end of Windows from scratch, and they pretty much are done. I mean, Windows keeps evolving and they keep having to catch up, but in the last 2 or 3 years, they have succeeded in changing the default from, if you try this Windows program under Wine, it's pretty well guaranteed to fail. And they flipped that to, if you try an arbitrary Windows program under Wine, it's generally likely to succeed. But that's still only a part of the Windows ecosystem. And Wine, if you didn't know, is free software. The other piece, the other big piece of the Windows ecosystem is the Windows kernel and drivers. And the hard part, as usual, is the drivers. Everybody who builds hardware builds a driver in binary to Windows specifications and then ships that binary and expects it to just work. And we would have to build a way for those drivers to plug into whatever operating system level we built underneath the Windows user experience. And that would be a multi-year effort with lots of care taken at the, you know, debugging things at a hardware level. There's a third aspect to Windows that would also need cloning if you wanted to do this, and that is the user and administrator and, you know, network administrator, system administrator experience. Part of the reason people are so comfortable with Windows is because it's easy to find out how to use it. There's all kind of resources to teach you about it. Everybody knows, at least outside of our community, everybody knows sort of the tips and tricks for how to make it stand up and dance. And we'd have to also replicate a lot of that so that it, when you booted up, you know, the GNU Windows environment, it felt pretty comfortable to an ordinary Windows user. Now, one thing I've noticed, though, is, and one of the reasons I doubt this as a goal, I mean, as a sort of external goal, it makes a lot of sense, right? You're going after the big kahuna in the marketplace. You've got all kinds of opportunity to replace it. It's a company that everyone loves to hate. But the catch is, how many of the people in our community actually want to understand the guts of Windows and replicate it? That's kind of the Achilles heel of this idea. I know the Wine Project has found it very hard to hire people who want to do that job. You know, and they have a very tight team of like 20 or 30 people scattered around the world who really enjoy doing it, but that's 20 or 30 people, not 1,000 or 10,000. So maybe that's not the best idea for, you know, what's the Free Software Foundation's and the Free Software Movement's stretch goal for the next 10 or 20 years? And that's why I wanted to start this conversation. I don't think we should just continue on, you know, releasing the latest version with 3 bugs fixed and 2 introduced, you know, of the find utils. I mean, it's great, but it's not inspiring. It, you know, what really brought this movement together was the idea that we could really improve the world by working together, each in our own little way, but towards a common goal. So what's that common goal? What do you see as some opportunity, something that's got a lot of leverage on the world that we have the skills in this community to accomplish?
Just go to the microphone.
Sure.
Can you just save me that one? What's
the... Well, this one's actually the one I'm using, right. So yeah. Too early in the morning? There we go. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for speaking. It's a challenge to comment on this in the first place because it's such heady stuff.
I think it's on. Okay.
Hello?
So it's hard to comment on this stuff in the first place. I don't know that company that you're talking about. I wouldn't aim for what someone else is doing. I think what brings us here is an ethic. I would be true to that. I would have original goals and hit those targets. Don't worry about what someone else is doing. That's what they're doing. They have done things to their own discredit. Always be constructive and have one's own goals. Thanks.
Sure.
Yeah, also it's going to be easy. Have you ever heard of ReactOS?
Yes.
Which is sort of like a Windows from the ground up, not like Wine, but sort of natively hosted. And they have a huge problem getting developers, of course, but I just thought I'd mention that one. I kind of know I'll probably still be working on Ganache in 10 years, so I kind of have my path already pegged out.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems to me that we're nowhere near finishing. We might be pretty near finishing Unix in the kind of nerdy command line way that we all love, but we're nowhere near finishing free software, especially as we see new spaces open up that need to be attacked, such as, well, not attacked, but worked on, such as free network services and so on. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to forget also that there's a tremendous amount of tools that we just haven't provided yet. Media authoring is very, very difficult with free software, except for in very particular circumstances. I mean, graphics have gotten a lot better. You know, I mean, we have Blender, Inkscape, and GIMP, and these are really great tools, and they're getting better all the time. But video editing is still extraordinarily hard, and we haven't. And here's a question: is should we be targeting? And this was a conversation from last night that I've been thinking a lot about. Should we be focusing on free software for hackers only when there's a tremendous amount of the rest of the world that's not using free software, but would it be in their best interest to do so? And we have not really breached the school systems, especially the educational world, you know, the business world where we're in certain ways, but certainly not as a platform where people can do their daily work. And, you know, plenty of people feel very constricted on the kind of computers they use every day at their work. Maybe that won't change because corporations love bureaucracy in many circumstances. But you know, but it doesn't seem to me that even if we've largely attacked the command line, there's new frontiers opening up all the time, and maybe at the point where when we have computers completely integrated with our bodies, we'll maybe reaching the end of these things, and which is the point at which I think free software will become a human rights issue. But you know, but I mean but it seems there's new frontiers, so we just need to keep looking for those new frontiers and keep trying to engage them as they open up.
Right. Well, we are. I mean, this is kind of an effort to look for those frontiers, you know, to put a name on them and to help encourage people to see that direction. I mean, I like the idea of media authoring. It was SGI, for example, made a big focus on media authoring. Eventually, it did not prevent their demise, but they did a good job of making a platform for that. Actually, speaking of media, could someone remove the DRM-infested logo from above my head?
So John, I think you're right about the issue with what Jeremy White's trying to do with Wine, and I'd add to that what Jeremy Allison and Tridge are doing with Samba. Those things, I think, are tactical moves to make sure that those who have the majority market share don't have control of it. I think there are other places, though, that we could make more strategic moves. I think Kweber mentioned one with regard to network services. Facebook is as ubiquitous as Windows now, and it's not only is it a proprietary software platform on which you can deploy proprietary applications over a proprietary API, but it's also everyone's social networking data all locked up into one place. We have technologies now like CouchDB and other types of distributed network service application environments that we could use to build fully free software using things like AGPL, social networking services. Identica and Status.net is one of them, answering the Twitter space, which is as popular as Facebook. But we also need the answer to that type of thing. And that's an area that it's a new frontier of hacking and interesting types of problems there that I think we could ask hackers to go to. The other area I think that you didn't mention that's important is the mobile space, where people have telephones now that are basically small computers that do almost everything a computer did 15 years ago. So we have to get fully free software stacks on all of those. We have some head starts with things like Android, but that's not fully free software yet, nor is MAMO, nor is Symbian. So we have to work on those code bases to get them fully free software. So I think those are a couple areas, in addition to the ones you mentioned, that we could encourage hackers to move towards to get more software freedom for everybody.
Right. Actually, one of the things I learned at Cygnus was the market for embedded operating systems is much bigger than the market for PC operating systems, and much more diverse. I think at the time I was looking at it, nobody had more than a 10% market share in it, and fully a third of the products that ship a computer embedded in some other product, you know, whether it's a car, a network router, a DVD player or whatever, fully a third of those folks wrote their own operating system to make the product. I mean, so Cygnus actually started an effort called ECOS to write a free operating system that would satisfy a certain corner of that market and then try to grow out of that. But there's a huge amount of both space and money and resources, you know, places where we can help the world to do what it's already doing better and cheaper, and therefore resources will flow in our direction to help us make that happen if we choose to go there. And the mobile space is certainly a piece of that, and you know, one that's very exciting to everybody because they've got one in their pockets. Who's next on the mic? Yep.
Okay, well, adding on to that, I think something that really needs to be addressed, and I've had some thoughts on this and just not had any chance to implement them yet, is the desktop paradigm needs to be replaced. It was created back in an age where people worked with documents as their primary thing, and people now work with devices. And so we need to create move away from a document-based desktop to a device-based desktop that's network-aware, so that you can move your data, just take it and move it over to your mobile device, take it from your mobile device and move it up to your web page, and instead of dealing with documents and folders and files. And I think that would be an excellent thing to do, and that, you know, with wanting to supplant Windows, something like that could supplant Windows, because it would be a new paradigm that people would be attracted to.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I mean, in some sense, you can change that out without changing out the underlying operating system. But in some senses, you actually have to alter it. For example, on the Macintosh, they decided they needed every file to have two independent byte streams so that they could store the GUI-related stuff in one and the data in the other.
I wanted to express a little concern about the goal of making a operating system interface that will run binary drivers for hardware. It just encourages hardware manufacturers to think that they can sell us hardware with no specs. Back when I was a youngster, if you bought a piece of hardware, it came with a description of how it worked. And I don't want to encourage the current popularity of the idea of we don't need to do that, just shut up and buy it.
Actually, that presumes that the manufacturers actually know how it works.
This guy, then you.
It's interesting what you said, whoever said there's a lot of room in the mobile market. I'm sorry, are we?
No, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think there is a lot of space there, and I think people mostly use their mobile stuff as a really small desktop. And so not exactly changing the paradigm, but looking at the ways that people use those machines. I'd love to be able to promote free software as, here's some really awesome stuff that doesn't exist in the proprietary world, as opposed to, it's almost as good or nearly the same, which is not as exciting. So I think there's a lot of room in there for different tools to be used, especially in like kind of the social end of mobile stuff.
Yeah, the challenge in doing that is really to do it as a project. Like every time someone has announced, we're going to make the great graphical user interface that will make all the others look obsolete, usually it has turned out not to do that. And so it might be easier to notice when some brilliant solo artist has figured out how to do that rather than try to find and inspire that artist now.
So many of the comments made so far have been about not following what's already been done in the proprietary world and making new innovations, and that's absolutely an important thing. But we have to face the reality is that a vast majority of the people using computers today are using proprietary systems, and they're going to keep using proprietary systems if things continue as they are continuing. At least the progress has been rather slow in getting them off of those systems. So we look at systems like Windows and Mac OS. Many of my friends that I convinced to switch to using GNU Linux eventually switched to using OS X because it captured a lot of the Unix-y goodness that made the GNU Linux environment attractive to them. So sort of taking free software forward can't just be about innovating in new ways. We have to figure out how to bring the rest of the world along with it as well. I don't know how to do that.
We have a whole nexus in the middle of the room that's hard to get microphones to.
So
just send it in.
Someone said this earlier, but I think the hardware bits, increasingly more and more of your hardware is controlled by software that's called firmware that you have no control over, no visibility into. Maybe the manufacturer doesn't see it either, but it increasingly limits what you can and cannot do. The Yong is a fine first step, but my phone, Android is just the top icing on the cake. All the underlying hardware OS that controls what they can and can't do with your phone would be awesome if that could be open as well. There's an open GSM project, stuff like that. But this is, free software should be free all the way down to the hardware, not just what you see on the top.
So maybe an effort to change minds among manufacturers of chips, for example, we've been trying to do that for a while with some success and some failure. Maybe we should turn our efforts towards building great tools for understanding binary programs and extracting behavior from those programs in a much more automated way, reverse engineering tools. From what I understand, I haven't done serious reverse engineering in 10 years. From what I understand, the best tools for doing that run on Windows at this point.
One of the ways that I don't hear many people discuss, but might be an interesting way to combine the work of people like Wine and trying to convince chipset manufacturers to help support free drivers is to, I guess, support Windows. One of the funny facts about the monopoly software industry is that Microsoft has orphaned Windows XP as the most popular operating system in the world, and increasingly modern hardware manufacturers have to kludge together fixes for everyone who are trapped in that Windows XP, title pool. If instead of kludging together Windows, we used the increasing momentum that we have and the increasingly capable free software drivers that can support this modern hardware by itself and presented a Wine-like API to Windows XP so that the users who were trapped there, maybe we could invert that user base to strengthen the free software drivers as the first line of actual support rather than a distant third from modern Windows, old Windows, and maybe we'll release some driver specs.
Okay. Brewster?
So there's some areas that I'd like to, out of today, try to figure out how to actually help move forward. So in the areas are in communications, the content layers, and the services layers. And how do we build open, reasonable stuff? In communications, why don't we have encrypted, spam-free communications? I mean, didn't we win this at the crypto wars? And all we do is seem to protect credit cards, which seems to be kind of broken. On the content layers, it's looking a little frightening out there. If you want to buy stuff, it's really linked to a store. whether it's Amazon, iTunes, or Google, the future Google Books. And that sort of really tying the content layer to stores, I find we can do something different then. The other is the services layer, that if we're going to try to build a Facebook, an open Facebook, I think we need open services. And can we build something like an S3? We've got an S3 for free. But can we build an EC2 for free that's open and privacy preserving so that we feel comfortable actually running our stuff on these areas? And finally, I think the thing that would propel us forward is not so much copying something that exists, but can we make a new application that is only possible because of our openness, because of open content, such that we can go and make something that's really whizzy because we don't have an advertising model to protect? I think we could blow something open in that area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I was actually thinking about what you said about GNU Windows, and the two combinations of those words kind of filled me with fear and loathing. Mm-hmm. But I think that in terms of wine, in terms of other technologies which really only seek to emulate or provide similar functionality, I think that's kind of a wrong way to go in general, because I think that it's basically emulating those same paradigms, which are basically paradigms that are 20 years old now and filled with cruft. And a really good example of this is we've done a lot of good work in getting wine to do regular applications that people might use, but the vast majority of things that lots of people use, lots of consumers use, including games and video, is not available on wine because of the fact that DirectX is only implemented on a very simplistic level. So, I think there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of graphics acceleration, and that's one big area where I think that we're actually losing ground, because increasingly what we see is we see DirectX itself tied to the hardware of the video card itself, and that acceleration is completely unknown to us. And I think that, that's actually it's a very important area, because if we were able to get something, all the great things that are on Windows, such as games, working just as well, without hacks, that would be very compelling to people, especially gamers who are very concerned about performance. And I think I worry that especially in the DirectX arena, a lot of that work is actually proprietary, because a company called Sodega forked wine and did a lot of proprietary work for it and didn't release it back. So I think that that's one area that we need to make sure that we don't get locked out of, because what we see now is we can run games that have DirectX 9 and DirectX 10 and 11 and beyond are already becoming locked off to us because of hardware acceleration. So mm-hmm. It's just something to think about. And I think that also, in terms of Samba and the other things, I don't think anyone here would suggest that Active Directory is how we should run our lives. So I think that our focus instead should be on developing free software replacements for these things that use new paradigms and modern paradigms, instead of embracing the Microsoft way of doing things, which is increasingly completely bankrupt as a model.
Right. Well, the interesting thing that happened with Unix is all the original pieces of GNU ran on proprietary Unix. And that gave us the opportunity to make each individual piece better than what came on Unix, and in many cases compellingly better, such that the people who were running the proprietary operating system started upgrading to free long before we could give them a whole package. And that gave us a user base, it gave us great feedback as to what the users actually wanted, and it gave us a set of developers who could already use their existing platform to contribute to what we were doing. I agree that making a fully free, fully compatible copy of Windows and would be just a first step, because the step after that is make a fully free, fully compatible, better version of Windows, right? When Microsoft has to start adding stuff to Windows to make it compatible with ours, that's when you know you've won. And this is what happened in the Unix market.
What I'm really worried about is that we are in the midst of a transition to a new paradigm of deployment of applications. We've left the desktop world, and now most applications are delivered through the browser. I know for one, I'm spending less and less time every day outside of my browser. And this is a shift as significant and as important and as game-changing as the shift was from mainframe-driven application to the desktop. And I don't see that the Free Software Foundation has yet
a good answer on how to deliver freedom to people who use browser-delivered applications. And Richard Stallman has already started that discussion, and I think we really need to engage that discussion and find out what is the equivalent of the GPL for an online application.
And well, we have one.
And I don't think that saying we're going to develop a open version of Facebook is a complete answer. I think it's the beginning of an answer, but I don't think it's sufficient of an answer. We need to work that question and go to deep into what it means to deliver freedom to online applications.
I actually wanted to add on to what this fellow right behind me was talking about, bringing lots of folks into the free software world. Computer gaming would be very important. Computer games have been with us since there have been computers, when they had the little analog controllers and transistors. And I know at their worst, it's just mindless time wasters, but at their best, computer games are art and literature. And I think having a solid computer gaming framework for free software would be good because, well, the best games make you think, the best games expand your mind. I know these aren't, unfortunately, free software examples off the top of my head, but I present Ultima 4 and Braid as examples of changing the way you think. So that would definitely be a way to bring in lots of folks into the free software world.
Well, and my experience is that people who start off playing computer games, if you make it easy enough for them to go in and alter those games, I've had a bunch of friends become programmers because they wanted to improve the games they were playing.
I sort of wanted to follow up on what the gentleman behind me said and tie together a few themes that I've heard about here. Someone was talking earlier about the need to run on Windows and reach out to the 90% of people who run on Windows. Someone was talking earlier about the need to make Microsoft react to us, to implement things that are implemented first in the free world and then later implemented in proprietary software. We've been talking about the need to give people tools which they can build software based on a free platform. We have all of these things. It's called the web. Features that were implemented first in free software in Firefox and in free software in Safari and in free software in Chrome, Microsoft is reacting to those now, is deploying on IE. Things that are done in those things can reach out to users who are on Windows. We can reach out to them and say, hey, you know, we're addressing your concerns here. We're making software that's relevant to you. And we can do it for ourselves as well. We know from studies that Red Hat has done that the second most used terminal on Linux desktops is, the second most used piece of software on Linux desktops is the terminal, and the first is the browser, and it has been for years already. And if we're not addressing freedom in that space, then we've already lost the game. We need to figure out, we've got all the pieces in place. We've got the client, we've got the servers, and we're just not answering the problems of privacy and security. We're not answering those in a way that's better than what proprietary services are giving people. We need to address that, and if we don't address that, they're going to beat us there again, and that would be a shame because we've got all the other pieces in place that we need to win there.
Oh, go.
Somebody talk.
Okay.
Who's holding a mic?
I'll speak now. Just a suggestion to start off. If you put a mic stand with a microphone, people could just like form a line. I don't know. Seems like makes sense to me, but okay. Anyway, so I'll try not to rant for an hour, but I'm slightly terrified by a lot of these answers I'm hearing and a lot of these points that are brought up because let's all really admit what Wine really should be for new users to GNU Linux. It really should be like Vaseline, kind of easing the transition from non-free to free, rather than how can we add a whole bunch of non-free software to a free software operating system. Really what we need to solve to help Windows users get to freedom is our user interface. To make it more friendly, to make it to have better documentation, to make it more easy for them to use and get around their systems. But we shouldn't try to emulate Windows. We shouldn't try to do what Windows do. We should try to do something better than what they do and offer something that people can't get with Windows, which is namely freedom. And if the second we start to say, let's emulate Windows, is the second we lose. I mean, I don't think that we're done emulating Unix because we're on a million front war, as I always say. We have Xboxes and Wiis and iPhones and millions of devices that are released every year that run non-free software that we have to replace with free software. And then we have problems with BIOSes and getting drivers to... I mean, there's millions and millions of problems that we can solve without worrying about what Windows is doing and trying to do something better than they are. And I think that a lot of us are seeking the easy way out and just trying to make people happy rather than give them something useful.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a real challenge in setting a goal for a movement. If you set it too low, like let's make a great authoring environment for media, you're probably done in 2 years, 5 years, whatever. If you set it too high, like let's replace all the free software in the universe, then you never get there and people get discouraged. There has to be some place in the middle where you can constructively engage 50,000 hackers to produce something that they wouldn't have produced just doing their own little parts by themselves. And I'm struggling, as we all are struggling, to try to find out what is that inspiring thing. Yeah.
So, a user base that I think would be really receptive to the idea of freedom, as well as to us providing tools to, is amateur creative people, musicians, artists, and so on. Because they want to be able to create using digital tools, but they don't necessarily know that free software is out there, what tools there are, and we do have a lot of good stuff available to them. So not knowing that, they go out and they pirate proprietary software, which is, you know, something pretty questionable. But as much as these proprietary software makers complain about piracy, they really do benefit from it because it creates format lock-in and intellectual lock-in. You know, if everybody knows Photoshop and everybody knows Pro Tools and things like that, they're not making the industry sort of branch out into other tools, other ways of doing things, exploring new possibilities. And we can provide that stuff to them. And when I've talked to people that are complaining about, you know, I have to go through all these hoops to like get a copy of Pro Tools running, I said, well, you know, we have stuff like Ardor and Adium and all that, you know, why don't you try that and maybe you could get what you need done. And they're very receptive to it. And I think if we can provide information to this community so they realize that we are an alternative that they can use legally, but that also that gives them a whole new set of opportunities and a new community they can participate in, and they can afford it because it's free, but they also get these benefits of freedom with the zero cost.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm up.
Yeah.
As new cohorts come into the...
we can't hear you. Speak closely into the mic.
As new cohorts come into the computing area, kids, people, they run into certain systems. And we don't have the advertising budget that Microsoft or Apple does. And so we have to use other means to get adopted. I don't need to talk about phones because there's plenty of tracks at the conference on that. But how do people get exposed to systems? They get exposed in the schools and they get exposed in businesses. How do we get those schools and businesses to adopt our systems? For better or for worse, most of these operations need to have central administration of the multiple interfaces that they're responsible for. They don't care as much about freedom as we do. They have a different set of objectives, so they need control. So if we do want to penetrate those areas, we need to be able to offer central administration, either through thin clients or remote administration, and it has to be very solidly done and well documented, and the people in these, in schools and companies, the administrative people, must want to adopt our technologies. So I think that's an important thing, and since we have advantages in security and price, if we can offer central administration solidly done, that would be a good thing.
There's a real challenge there, because you know, one of the best known free software projects in the world, the One Laptop Per Child effort, went off the rails and built DRM into their infrastructure so that the schools could control the laptops. And at the moment, I think the biggest deployment of those laptops in South America ships them where, so the kid has no access to replace the software on their machine, no access to root on the machine, completely violating the GPL, and nobody from the free software community has done squat about it. Right, the administrator's desire for control has even trumped the free software licenses, and so far we've let them get away with it.
Okay. I wanted to look at this from a different angle, and that angle is you're speaking to someone and trying to convince them that they could switch to Linux or some free software solution. And what I found, I feel like what I need to say to that person so that they're on board is I needed to say to them, the things that you do on a computer, you can do with this software. And I need to give them, beyond that, some compelling reason why it would be better than what they're doing now. And that needs to be more than just a little bit of reason, because there's the fear of the uncertainty. They know that what they do now works. I'm trying to convince them that what they could do will work, but they don't know that as much as they know that what they do already works. So I feel like a lot of people have been suggesting things that address either of those two things. The wine and stuff like that addresses the concern, yes, you can do what you've always done. And it's not, we need to argue about which of those things. We need both. People don't switch if it just does what they already do. People don't switch if it doesn't do what they already do. So I just wanted to give that way of looking at these different things, and we can all realize we need both. Thank you.
Hello. I think free software already has a lot of strength that it should really push, as opposed to trying to react to proprietary minor changes. Now, not to denigrate wine at all, but it's reacting to proprietary closedness that makes the whole project seem just a little bit more pardon me, but ugly than it should be. I think that, well, let me digress just a little bit. Blender software is absolutely amazing. As a fellow by the name of Walter Wicks, who's written a book that shows how you can do video editing with Blender, and it's also doing, it's got audio screens, you can do 3D modeling, it does architectural rendering. It's a marvelous, like Swiss Army knife-like piece of software that I think solves a lot of the problems that that you already mentioned. Probably the best thing, in my opinion, that we've seen so far is the Lemote, that promises of a really free machine that we could work to. And if we were working more to configuring that machine so that it's as solid as, say, the Apple is, then I think that you'd have a really great success on your hands, because that's where Apple's success comes from, I think, is that they've picked a single hardware platform, they've configured well for it, and they market it, and they put it out there, and it works pretty well. Not as well as Linux, and I can tell you that for sure, because my wife just bought an Apple, and we have a Linux machine right beside it, and the Linux machine is much faster and better in many ways. She's very technology shy, but I've made a Linux believer out of her already, and she's had her Apple for about 6 months. So I think working to her strengths would be better than trying to retrofit.
Well, it's an interesting idea to try to focus in on a combination hardware-software platform. The OpenMoCo people tried to do that in the phone space and didn't succeed. I was the fifth employee at Sun Microsystems, which had a very Apple-like model as far as we design the hardware, we write the software, we're using software that, you know, is in common with lots of other companies, but we customize it to work really well together. We write all our own drivers, and with the fit and finish is very good when you do that combination of making the hardware and making the software. As a movement, we could try to do that. It requires succeeding at that requires a whole lot of skills that we don't have. That OpenMoCo didn't have. They didn't succeed in getting the fit and finish. They didn't succeed in selling the phones in large numbers. I don't know if Leemote is the right partner for that or not. Maybe they are, but I hadn't heard their name until I heard it from the Free Software Foundation.
You have 5 minutes.
Yep.
I'm Dalian from Detroit. Detroit is the keyword here. So we have all those sweet laptops and phones, and then we have focused on all those consumer electronics, and then we forget something so important. 40,000 people in America died in 2005 in car accidents, pardon me. When are we going to start choosing automobiles with free software? So let me just ask, who drives a Cadillac? Raise your hands. Anybody with a Cadillac? So you have a GNU sticker on your Cadillac, and yet my friend Toby wrote your suspension code on the embedded controller. It's a closed source. It is buggy because Toby hates his job, okay? I'm not even joking. So with that said, I think we need to start fighting this front too and choose vehicles that are free source, free code, free software, sorry. And I think this is the perfect timing too, Detroit being in shambles. And Toyota accidental acceleration. I mean, wouldn't you want to know what code made your car accidentally accelerate? What the heck? So with this said, and I'm going to conclude, there's a new organization called Genevi, maybe I'm mispronouncing it, Genevi.org. This is BMW, Delphi, Visteon using GNU Linux in vehicles, and I think we need to start thinking about that too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. I had one more thought. This thought comes from India. I've had the chance to spend 1 year in India working with a group called Servlots, and it's a nonprofit in Bangalore who develops free software on behalf of other nonprofits. And from my discussion with them, I gathered that India and the third world in general is very concerned that currently, whenever they want to run any software, that software comes from the Western world. It comes from the Western world, which means that they are controlled by the Western world. And it also means that these software do not represent their culture. These pieces of software do not represent the way they themselves would do things if they had the chance to ever build it. And it's a very subtle thing. It's the capacity to imagine what would Facebook look like if it would have been designed first from the ground up, according to Indian laws of socializations. Now, I can't imagine what this is. It's difficult standing in India as an Indian to imagine what this is, but you can be damn sure that Indians know it would not look like Facebook.
So, again, one of those challenges is the whole concept of openness and freedom is one of those Western values. If we believe in those values, we're trying to spread them into cultures that don't necessarily embrace them. The spread of free software into China, for example, is an area, I mean, free cryptographic software was a threat to, you know, even the control structures of the United States. And it took a 10-year battle to get them to back off, in which we had to invoke sort of our strongest sword against the government, the First Amendment.
It's the last question.
Yep.
Yeah, good morning. I teach GNU Linux at one of
America's largest community colleges outside of Phoenix, Arizona, Mesa Community College. And this discussion has been very interesting to me because I think what I need to focus on is finding a way to get my students involved in venues like this, getting them to come to venues like this in some sort of scholarship fashion, or maybe there's already a nonprofit that makes that possible so that we can get new blood into the movement and so they can see what the issues really are. So I think that's going to be my focus coming up.
Thanks. Great. Thanks, everybody. And
thank you. Thank you, John. Yeah.